101 WJCT in Jacksonville. This is our weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. I'm your host, Vince Kong, and this is Redux. It's Friday, December 2nd. Hope you all had a very good Thanksgiving. After a week off, and to commemorate the official start of the holiday season, this episode of Redux will feature pretty much everyone's favorite subject this time of year, or at least mine, food. From farm to table to vegan dining options, to urban land deserts, to even backyard chickens, no, not eating them, we're going to look at all things food related here on the First Coast. But first, some news.
This week, free condoms. Come on, stocking stuffers.
As many of you may already know, this past week was AIDS Awareness Week. There's still no cure or vaccine for HIV/AIDS, which affects approximately 37 million people around the world. For an update about the spread of this disease in Jacksonville, we have Max Wilson, who is the Duval County Health Department's HIV and AIDS Program Coordinator.
Generally speaking, Florida, in terms of new HIV infections, is pretty consistently ranked in the top three states. Right now we're about two. And within the state of Florida, the Jacksonville area, is ranked number three in terms of new infections. And we're pretty consistently either three, four, or five.
Reporter Lindsay Kilbride will have the full story on the state of HIV/AIDS in Duval County on our website. That's WJCTnews.org. Please check it out. Holiday dining means plenty of ham and turkey to go around, and of course, there's mashed potatoes with all the fixins. But what about for vegans? Well, you're pretty much out of luck. That is, unless you're dining out here in Jacksonville. That's because it's getting easier and easier to find friendly menus when eating out. As WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride reports, restaurants are seeing their bottom line grow when they adapt to those who don't eat animal products.
Owner of Riverside restaurant Nacho Taco, Mehmet Shefalu, just sprinkled a pile of imitation chicken on a hot flat top grill. He's assembling vegan chicken tacos, a customer favorite, he says.
Lettuce, tomato, vegan cheese, and vegan sour cream.
That's no meat and no animal products, like milk, cheese, or eggs. Shefalu opened Nacho Taco about a year ago. The tiny place on Stockton Street started by serving up the expected steak and chicken burritos and chimichangas. But months ago, a vegan customer brought in some imitation meat made from soybeans and asked him to cook it. Then he started keeping it in stock.
It was kind of like a hidden menu for people, but so many people started talking about it that it went straight from being just something that we kind of did for a few people to a lot of people coming in and visiting us because of that.
Now dishes with imitation chorizo sausage and chicken are a permanent part of the menu. Shefalu says what he quickly learned was accommodating vegans wasn't that hard.
Because we mostly use, you know, olive oil and things that are vegetarian and vegan friendly.
Vegan and vegetarian orders now account for about 30% of Nacho Taco sales. And for restaurants that need more persuading, there's a local movement to get more of them to carry vegan dishes.
Whether it's helping them, you know, come up with some ideas of some things that they can do, or labeling their menu more clearly.
Jessica Campbell is a paralegal by day and during her off time, the creator of Jack's Vegan Love.
I consider myself a vegan enthusiast.
She meets with restaurant owners and chefs to say the vegan community wants to eat out. Will you make that easier?
I think sometimes they're scared to do like a faux version of something, like that maybe you'll be turned off by it, or that it's not, you're not going to consider it high quality because it's something that is partially store-bought.
If that's the case, she'll ask them to try one vegan dish.
You know, just try it as a special and let's see how it goes. I would say that Sushigo in Avondale is my biggest success story.
That's Sushigo, a sushi restaurant.
So we have a complete, like, the vegan menus. We have a lot of options for vegan, like the appetizer, anchovies, sushi rolls.
Manager Ellie Lee is reading from a menu of 39 vegan rolls, stuffed with veggies, tofu, imitation meat, non-dairy cream cheese, and vegan versions of shrimp and eel sauces. It's a whole lot more variety than the typical asparagus or cucumber rolls vegans usually have to choose from.
Like, they rather to have the foods cooked, like crispy, you know, like fried.
The good stuff. Like this fried pork roll, the pork is soy, the chef is cutting up and plating with vegan cream cheese and sauce. Lee says 15 to 20 people order from the vegan menu every day.
But now it seems like people not vegan, but they will order some of the rolls, like try, see if they like the options.
And Jack's Restaurant Review blogger Jerry Watterson can attest to that. He hosts 6-course dinner events at Jacksonville restaurants every month.
When we do vegan events, 60% of the room's not vegan, which people wouldn't expect. But we have more people that are looking to eat a little healthier, maybe a little fun and more unique, not the things that they see on a menu every day.
With that in mind, he's begun offering an additional all-vegan dinner event each month. Turns out those events are the most popular and sell out the quickest. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
And locally sourced ingredients have been a huge part of these vegan options. Case in point, Jacksonville's Kangaree and Penn Farm has had huge success in its 2 years of business, mainly by selling rice to local restaurants. In this week's Business Brief, analyst John Burr tells WJCT News Director Jessica Palumbo the crops cultivated there are a nod to the region's past.
John, you visited Kangaree and Penn Farm. Where is that exactly in Jacksonville?
It's on the north side off of Old Kings Road. It's about 20 minutes from downtown. They've got two crops. They've got Mayhews and they've got rice. And the rice is pretty amazing. They've got 6 patties, and they are producing upwards of about 20,000 pounds of rice per crop. The local chefs love it, and you can see that Kangaree and Penn name. It's popping up on menus all over town. I talked with the farm manager, Scott Meyer, about that.
The chefs are looking to put, you know, the best thing that they can get and put it on a plate so that people can enjoy it. And you know, especially with some of the other things we do with the rice beyond just milling it fresh is milling these different varieties like with the Midlands, which I sell to Taverna and Orsay and some other restaurants in town like Moxie and Black Sheep. We're actually purposely cracking the grain, which is going to allow it to kind of soak in flavors more, cook up kind of creamier and have a better flavor. And that's what they're actually doing with the Midlands is making dishes very similar to like an Italian risotto.
Rice is kind of an unusual crop for this area, right?
It is now, but they were telling me about 100 years ago, rice was a very big crop in northeast Florida, but they kind of lost the market when all the mechanized farms in Louisiana kind of put them out of business. But they're back, and they're doing great.
Cool.
This other crop they've got, it's called Mayhew. It's a traditional southern crop. It's like a small red crab apple. They make jelly out of it. They make juice. They make cider. Barbecue sauce, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it's got a sweet and somewhat tart taste. And this is what they're planning on to be the big cash crop for them in the years to come. Bob Burns, a partner in the farm, explained to me why they're concentrating on the Mayhew.
We feel that it's got just a great potential because it's a new fruit in the marketplace that hasn't been commercialized in the past. Mm-hmm. So as we grow more and more trees, we'll create a market locally.
Right now, you can't get the Mayhew. They're still working up the full production on that, but you can get that rice, and they're selling it at farmers markets around town and in the area, Fernandina Beach and Nocatee and Ram. So try it out.
The farm is Kangaree and Penn. WJCT business analyst John Burr visited the farm. I'm WJCT news director Jessica Palumbo.
Of course, we can all benefit from more fruits and vegetables in our diets, which leads us to our next series of stories, which is about how Jacksonville is trying to transform the city's east side by emphasizing the word farm and farm to table. Our first story looks at Greenscape of Jacksonville teaming up with TD Bank to plant fruit trees on the city's east side. Blake Allen tells us more about the efforts to help feed residents living in these urban pockets commonly known as food deserts.
Digging in the dirt with the sun beating down, TD Bank employees and members of tree-planting nonprofit Greenscape of Jacksonville are working side by side. Greenscape board member Gabrielle Dempsey explains what the event in A. Philip Randolph Heritage Park is all about.
It's basically so the residents of this area will have fresh fruit that they can actually come and pick and, you know, take care of and nurture these trees. It's a beautiful park, and this is just a great addition.
Altogether, they planted 74 fruit and nut trees, everything from citrus to pecans. Greenscape Executive Director Anna Dooley says they'll help feed the park's neighbors.
The community, the East Side community, is banding together. They're really very excited about this project, and I think they realize the importance of establishing a fresh food forest.
Dooley says the first fruits should be available for picking in a year. Blake Allen, WJCT News.
And now, Jacksonville's East Side is also about to host its first public market thanks to a partnership with the nonprofit Groundwork Jacksonville. As Kayla Davis reports, organizers hope to make it a permanent fixture in the neighborhood.
The Jacksonville Public Market will be located on A. Philip Randolph Boulevard. Its goal, according to its website, is to connect food, culture, and people. The Saturday event will feature vendors, cooking demonstrations, live entertainment, and activities for kids. Groundwork Jacksonville Market Manager Ken Covington says the main focus is to create more business opportunities and bring healthy food and produce to Jacksonville's East Side.
So what we're looking to do is to try to be a catalyst to try to help bring some of that commercial vigor back to this core.
Groundwork's goal for the East Side is to increase the quality of life for its residents. The event is set to run from 10 to 4 on Saturday. Kayla Davis, WJCT News.
A special thanks to Blake Allen and Kayla Davis. This was the final week of their internship here at WJCT. Thanks again for all of your help. On behalf of the WJCT staff, your hard work and dedication was appreciated. And now, a Jacksonville woman is hoping to unite the community and offset some of the negative environmental effects of food production by creating small community farms. As WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride reports, a Northeast Florida nonprofit awarded her $5,000 this month to begin the project.
With the help of a grant, 27-year-old Melissa Beaudry is bringing to town something called Fleet Farming, modeled after a program created in Orlando. Homeowners donate their lawns to be turned into mini farms called farmlets.
And a group of community volunteers will then come and harvest the farmlet and grow produce, and then sell the produce at a local market.
And the profit goes into creating more tiny farms. Beaudry says farming this way can offset the carbon footprint of global food production.
Most prominently, the amount of miles that our food travels to get to our plate.
About 1,500 miles on average, according to the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture. The grant for Beaudry's project came from the Public Trust Environmental Legal Institute of Florida. She and other finalists pitched environmental projects, and hers got the most votes last week from a crowd of about 80 people. She says she envisions volunteer harvesters taking their produce to places like the Riverside Arts Market.
There's some people that just want to go for a bike ride. There's some people that really want to buy some lettuce. And that's the beauty of food, is that it brings people together.
Beaudry says she plans to start planting in the spring. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
And finally, no backyard farm is complete without, well, you guessed it, chickens. There's, of course, the benefits of fresh eggs, pest control, free fertilizer, and, of course, companionship. But it's also easy to forget that chickens can save lives. As Allie George reports, the first line of defense against mosquito-borne disease in Northeast Florida is a troop of chickens standing guard.
Backyard chickens are a source of eggs for many residents, but for the state's mosquito prevention programs, they serve a very different purpose. So-called sentinel chickens act as an early warning system for mosquito-borne illnesses like West Nile or Eastern equine encephalitis.
Because there's no point in blindfolding yourself before going out and trying to solve a problem.
That's Anastasia Mosquito Control's Christopher Bibbs.
And that's exactly what these things do. They give us eyes so that we can target things properly.
Though the chickens can receive viruses that make people sick, they can't pass them to people and don't show symptoms themselves. They lead pretty normal lives, save for a weekly blood draw, in coops located throughout St. John's County. Last month, chickens in northern St. John's tested positive for Eastern equine encephalitis, which allowed the health department to issue an advisory. No human cases have since been reported. But Bibbs says the chickens won't likely help detect Zika before humans are affected. The mosquitoes that carry it prefer people blood. Allie George, WJCT News.
And that's our show. You can find all of our audio and web stories at wjctnews.org. You can also stream this podcast as well as all of our on-air content on the WJCT app, which is available on iTunes and the Google Play Store. And of course, find us on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. If you've got the blues, you're in luck. Blues Horizon is aired on 89.9 FM or streamed on our WJCT app at 11 p.m. on Mondays. This week, host Andrew Wickman will feature Eric Clapton with an hour-long career retrospective, which includes a playlist of rare live tracks as well as radio staples. Here's a sample of what you'll hear. Please enjoy. And that concludes Redux from WJCT in Jacksonville. I'm Vince Kong. Thank you for listening.